It's a video on YouTube I found, Brennan, called like when you watch a lore video about something you know nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like this guy making up all this bullshit about like some mythical place, all the increasingly like improbable names. It's like, of course, they were called the Burkard clans, and Burkard meaning with feathers, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. They were, and they then they were taken out by the plague of Fusili Paganini.
Honestly, Fusili Paganini sounds like something I would order at like an olive.
Yeah, that, to be fair, that does sound pretty good.
Yeah, can I have Fusili Paganini? That sounds lovely. Thanks.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends watch a bad movie, talk about what they liked, what they didn't like, and how they would fix it, all while enjoying a themed cocktail. I am your host for this mini episode, Brendan Drischler.
I'm Lee Delahanty.
And I'm Chris Revell.
We all are. And as you can tell by firing up your phone and looking at that little app with the picture of a calendar on it, we are almost at the end of the year at this point. That's mm-hmm. right. It is our traditional closing of the year, year in recap episode. So we'll be covering all the crap that we watched and drank and lamented in a little bit. But of course, naturally, it being a mini episode, we're also going to talk about the movie that we will be doing for January and the drink that we'll be making to accompany that movie. So our January movie, the first 2026 movie, is 2005's The Island, directed by Michael Bay, starring Ewan McGregor, ScarJo, Jimon Hansu, Sean Bonn, Michael Clark Duncan, and Steve Buscemi.
I'm very excited because if I remember correctly, isn't this like early Bay? Like,
I mean, it's 05. I don't know.
Pre-Transformers Bay?
Oh, sure. It's like
it's as opposed to old Bay.
Yeah. Yeah. It does not have the season that I've come to expect.
As
from
soon
old
as
Bay.
You said early Bay, like something in my brain, like a dog, like perked up. Like there's a joke.
Chris, it is in the first half of his filmography, but mm-hmm. like that's not saying a whole lot.
No, I suppose not.
Yeah,
I don't think that he like. When would you think the first Michael Bay movie came out that we're all like, it's this guy doing his shtick?
Probably sometime in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, looking at this, his first movie is Bad Boys in 95.
Right.
His second is The Rock in 96, which kind of clearly cements like the Michael Bay aesthetic sort of, you know.
And like, also kind of cements him as an action guy people want to work with.
And then it's followed by Armageddon. So it's like, again, we're really driving home, like, what is a Michael Bay movie? Who is Michael Bay? It's these things. These are what they are.
Right.
So, yeah, this is Ott 5. So it was just before he embarked on his decade of Transformers.
And this was the same year I graduated high school and went to college.
What a fun anecdote. This is the same year we all graduated high school and went to college.
That's true.
So you're not special. So just
I'm special for other reasons.
No,
okay?
You're not. You're not at all. And stop saying it.
This
please.
Is the millennial lie, Chris, and we all need to shake it
it's,
off.
I mean, that's true. We could all write dissertations about that, I'm sure.
All those trophies we were given as children fucked us up irrevocably.
Yep. It's that and avocado toast. Those are the two veins of our existences.
As I said, 2005's The Island, which I've never seen. Lee, you have seen, but don't really remember?
No, I remember it pretty well.
Okay.
I mean, it's like been a minute, but I remember the gist of it. When you said it should be something maybe like silly and a little absurd, I went on my letterbox, which is highly incomplete in terms of logging movies I've actually seen. And I just went by decade until I found The Island, and I was like, that's the one.
that's a very good means of determining movies,
really
actually.
Is.
It's probably something I should look into doing at some point. But a good call, I think, nonetheless.
Yeah, I agree.
I think this is still also our only Michael Bay movie that we've ever done? I think it is.
Wow. And he certainly has quite a load of crap we could really go through if we wanted.
He does, but he also has Ambulance, which is great.
Okay, I never got around to seeing that, but I did hear really good things about
it. You should 100% see Ambulance. Ambulance is a lot of fun. Anyways.
That's a newer one, right?
Yeah, that was during
like last
COVID,
year,
I believe. No, I think it was a little longer than last year, but let me double check real quick. Ambulance was 2022.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was a COVID movie. And someone bought him a drone during COVID, and he just said, wow, what fun, and just went fucking nuts with it for an entire movie. So I think it's a worthwhile watch.
Okay. Maybe this season.
I mean, I don't think it's bad. I think it's good. So I would not suggest we do it for podcast, but I think it's a fun watch nonetheless. So yeah, we will be discussing that movie in 2 weeks. And of course, what with it being a movie that we're discussing, we'll need a drink to go with it. So the drink that we will be making for the island is called Aces and Spades. It is 3 ounces of Aperol, 3 ounces of cranberry juice, 1/2 ounce of orange juice, 4 ounces of Prosecco, rosemary sprig, and an orange. What you're going to do is you're going to add the Aperol, the cranberry juice, the orange juice, and a rosemary sprig to a shaker with ice. Shake it until it's chilled, then strain it into a glass over ice. Top with Prosecco, give it a gentle stir, add a rosemary sprig and an orange twist to garnish.
I'm excited to taste it. I think it sounds very tasty and wintry.
It does. It sounds very seasonally appropriate. Yes. So if we can't do a hot drink, you might as well do a citrus cranberry drink.
Yes, exactly.
There's the only two things you're allowed to drink during
winter.
We have to
stave scurvy off somehow. Okay?
That's right.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I said, 2 weeks. Tune in for The Island. We'll all be very interested in seeing what is on The Island.
The island.
So, yeah, having covered all of that, we will move on to our traditional closing of the year. I believe this is closing of the year 9, which is kind of insane to think
about. That's really crazy to think about.
Really,
I can't.
Horrifying to imagine.
Our bones are actively crumbling to dust, and we're just flying away in the wind.
Yep. It's a little bit like the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Yeah. So, as is our want for our closing of the year, we just talk a little bit about the year in review. We talk about our favorite and least favorite movies and drinks. I had plopped a list into the chat earlier just so that we could all remember what all those things were. I'll just go through it real quick. As for movies, which we'll go first, in order this year, we did The Magic Flute, 3 to Tango, Who is Cletus Tout, The Box, Addicted to Love, It Could Happen to You, The Singing Detective, Something Like Summer, The Apple, I Am Number 4, The Mummy Returns, Volunteers, and Happiest Season. 13 gems.
So let me just, I just wanted to point something out. I did not realize this. I never realized this until I see the list in front of me. But we watched, I just feel like the overall like quality, even when things were bad, almost every movie we chose was like a really fun time. So yeah, really, really solid season in that regard.
I would be inclined to agree for the most part. A couple of duds that I don't remember enjoying all that much, but you know, hey, there you are. That's the way it goes.
Yeah. Some really crazy Wikipedia summaries from my memory too.
Yes.
Some very long Wikipedia summaries.
I still think about the one from The Box a lot and how little sense it made if you were to just read it.
I remember, I re-listened to that episode a while ago, and there's a bit in it where we get to a part of the Wikipedia summary where they're covering the Santa that just pops up in the middle of the road and causes an accident.
That's the stupidest bit.
The way they phrase it in the Wikipedia thing was, it was like, he gets into a car accident because of a man who looks like Santa.
That's right, a man who looks like Santa. That's right. Like that. A man who has disguised himself as Santa. I forgot about that.
It's just so funny because what that implies is that
it's a man who just happens to kind of look like Santa.
Yeah, like he just has like a long beard. Like what
right.
is that?
He's wearing like a red jumpsuit or something. It just happens to look like Santa. Like, no.
But it also does not capture what it really was, which is it was a man in a Santa suit.
Yes. I mean, maybe that person, to be fair, maybe that person is easily stymied by like Santas and malls at this time of year too, where they just like see a guy sitting on a chair like, it's an interesting coincidence. Santa. This guy looks a lot like Santa. What's this all about?
Do we want to name like best and worst?
I think I have like two looking at this list fave movies
okay
this year, and I think one of them is The Box.
I'm with you on that one. That's one of my favorites as well.
I think is a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun talking about it with you guys. I had a lot of fun trying to figure out what the fuck it was trying to say. I keep hearing rumors that Richard Kelly is making another movie. I really hope he does, because I would love to talk about it one day on this podcast.
Even if it's actually like perfect, no notes, we have to do it in a mini or something.
No, I know. I agree. It just feels like we've been hitting all of the other ones, minus, of course, Donnie Darko. So like we kind of have to now at this point.
Well, and I get a real kick out of the true just insanity he served up.
I do too.
Like, and I really, really, really dig how he always takes big fucking swings, and his ambition is always huge.
Right. I mean, like, the worst crime you can commit is being boring, I think.
Correct.
And it's not boring. So I would rather have you be batshit insane than be boring. And he is batshit insane. So I'm happy with it. And I feel like the other one I would have to call out, of course, for me is The Apple, a movie that is also batshit insane, but I truly love.
But a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
I would also agree with that. I think that was the other favorite that I identified. I know it was one we had already seen. It's one that we're like very familiar with, but I just had a blast with it.
My favorite for the year has got to be The Magic Flute.
I feel like Magic Flute for me is kind of an honorary mention, you know, because like it again, similar.
Oh,
it's not quite to the extent that something like, say, The Box is, but it is, again, another example of like, you might as well make a crazy movie. You know, if you can't make a good adaptation of The Magic Flute, you might as well make one that takes place in Twink Academy.
Yeah. See, I don't.
Twink Academy is one of our best jokes. It just
like Twink Academy.
What are you gonna
say? I don't really like The Box. Like, I think that The Box is fun for all of the humor that came out of us talking about The Box, but I did not like watching The Box as much. Like, I don't know. I didn't get a lot out of the movie itself, but The Magic Flute, I just love how fucking weird it is. It's just kind of banana. It's bananas. Like, I don't know what's going on with it. It's trying to be like eight things at times.
Right.
They spent some weird amount of money making a big CGI Chinese dragon, Chinese myth dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
The thing you said you were gonna do one day, which was cue up Smooth by Santana featuring Rob Thomas to the snake coming through the desert at Tenino.
I said that.
Yes.
But why did I say Smooth?
Because, well, it was, we were like, all three of us were riffing on what other different songs they could put in that scene.
Yeah.
And there were like two that we were like goofing on, and then we said like Smooth by Santana and Rob Thomas.
Like,
oh, I'm gonna make that video. As soon as he steps out on it, just starts up.
Oh my god.
It truly is. I mean, Magic Flute truly kind of is one of those, like, I don't know who this movie was made for experiences, you know, which I think makes it so enjoyable. Like, it clearly isn't made for fans of the opera, and it clearly isn't made for people who would enjoy seeing Twink Academy, the movie.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I don't understand what anyone's intention was here. So I appreciate the fact that you sort of thought this was somehow making a movie that was, I guess, in some way populist that would appeal to people.
I remember we found some quote from the director who was saying like, you know, I wanted to make this really accessible to people who didn't know opera. And like, one of the things he said he wanted to address was like, when to clap. And we're like, but this is a movie.
No one claps.
When to clap. Well, one of the biggest problem with opera is nobody knows when to clap.
When do you clap?
This like one poor dope just stands up in the middle of the opera. Someone's singing an aria. Someone just stands up and starts clapping. Like, everyone gives him dirty looks. He has to sit back down. How embarrassing.
The other treasured memory I just wanted to say was that
we ordered Papagino's.
We did.
I've been thinking about Papagino's legitimately a lot, and how hard it is to get in Boston.
So Lee, I gotta say, we're doing a movie again in January. If you want to order Papagino's again,
let's order Papagino's.
Papagino's it up.
We did it for last January. This could be our new January tradition. Now we order we Papagino's every January.
Do any of you remember that the princess Pamina has a like?
The fettuccine
piece
strand.
Of linguine or fettuccine.
Right. Or it looks like she just got back from Olive Garden and didn't realize that it's like on her chin and everyone's too polite.
It does
to
kind
be
of look like discount, like Naboo style.
No, it is very much. Right. It's like you're doing Naboo or Coruscant on like a high school musical budget.
Yeah.
Right. It's like true dollar store Naboo.
Yeah. It is a fun movie. I have no idea when the mood will strike me to ever watch that again, but I feel like it will at some point.
It was an experience I'm glad we had together.
I am too.
Because we did have a hell of a time goofing on it.
Yes. And the leading hyper twink is starring in Hadestown on Broadway currently.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. That's the thing that's happening right now, right?
Yeah, so good for you, Jack Wolf.
Jack Wolf. I mean, what an insane name. Graduate.
I know, it is.
Isn't that literally like a Comedy Bang Bang character?
Jack Wolf.
Probably.
Probably.
There's like a guy who like is a reporter.
Are you thinking of Wolfman Jack?
Wolfman Jack is a real person. I mean.
But they've done him. They've like someone has come on and played him as a character, I think, once or twice.
Yeah. But where he's like actually he's like a reporter, but then he also is a crime fighter, or he becomes Wolfman. This is a character that I've definitely heard. Anyway, it might be Wolfman Jack. It might be someone else. There might be like a vigilante type that goes by something similar to the wolf, or I can't remember.
As we all know, for there to be a new hyper twink, the first one must be killed in hand-to-hand combat. So I wish
or graduate to becoming a twunk. You must either die or become a twunk.
Or
you either live long enough to become the hero, or
you sign the devil's book and become a demon twink.
Yes,
which is a great segue into for me just the worst movie we did all year, and it's just so easy because it's just functionally not a movie. Is something like Summer? That's just it is the worst. I
can't argue that point.
It's barely it was kickstarted, right? Like right. This was not made by people that knew how to make movies.
No, it was not, and it shows.
It's you made me watch it, and I'm mad about it a little bit.
It's terrible. It's brain bending.
Did you know Faith and Max just watched it this past weekend?
What?
Max had never seen it, so Faith and Max watched it after Waffle Night.
One thing that Faith and I are both really good at is like if we feel like someone needs to see something, whether it is good or bad, we will be there with them. We will steward them through it.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. So I understand that from Faith's perspective.
Yes, and I understand that Max is no longer our friend now, from what I can see online.
What?
Yeah, Something Like Summer is definitely, like, I think probably also very... Something Like Summer is one of those things where, like, it almost transcends badness to become, like, I don't know, some sort of religious experience in my head or something. Yes. Where it just almost feels like you're seeing things that aren't possibly there.
Yes.
You know, it's like you're talking to God in the desert, and like you're just getting these messages beamed into your head from this movie, just trying to make sense of like what anyone thought they were doing, or how anyone thought these were characters or a story.
This is what they showed to the guy in Clockwork Orange when he had his eyes like peeled open.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah,
because it really is a remarkably insane movie. On the surface of it, you're like, oh, okay, I mean, this doesn't look good, but it just hides. It is so deceptively insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a simulacrum of a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, again, the thing I keep coming back to is that review on Letterboxd, which was like Sean Cody does a Lifetime movie, which really, truly is what this feels like to me.
Yes.
The only other contender I think I would possibly have looking over this again is I feel like whereas Something Like Summer for me was like an insane bad movie experience, something like I Am Number 4 was just kind of a boring bad movie experience for me.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Right. So like I think that those are the two like options you have. Like you can pick a movie that's genuinely like just boring bad or a movie that's batshit insane bad. So mm-hmm. if I had to pick one that was more boring bad, like I Am Number 4 is a movie that I can't imagine I will ever feel the need to revisit, you know? Like there's just so little there.
Right.
Yeah. I guess does anyone else have any contenders for worse? I think for me I agree. Something Like Summer is probably pretty bad. Looking it over, yeah. Honestly, I think most of these other ones, I wouldn't stab my eyes out if I had to watch again.
Right. I feel like there's a handful here that like I wouldn't recommend people watch, but I wouldn't it's not like they're terrible, you know? It's more just sort of like, I don't know, like would I say you should watch The Singing Detective? Like probably not, because there's a TV series that does it better.
You should just watch instead, yeah.
Right. So it's just sort of like, I wouldn't really recommend you watch the movie The Singing Detective, but like you could, you know? Right. Like I'm not going to stop you, although I could. I'm a big guy and I'm good with knots, so I probably could. But like something like I Am Number 4, it would just be a movie where I would say, like, no, there's literally no reason. Like, you'll get nothing from this movie except maybe how hot Timothy Oliphant is. Aside from that, there's pretty much nothing going on here.
I still just wanted to say the one thing I remember the clearest about I Am Number Four was the scene where he like pulls up that website that the photographer girl at school has put up all of these candids of him. Yes. That he didn't realize were being taken, and then as he's scrolling through, they just get
they start disappearing. Because you know that's how it works. Web pages refresh automatically every millisecond.
Every millisecond. But it was that, and then the other one of there's like some scene where like the police sheriff is like menacing a blonde girlfriend, and he's basically just like, "Why did you break up with my son? It's illegal to not date my son."
That, I mean, both that cop, that was like a regular, like, I can't think of the names of any of these horrible people right now, but like those like when some white frat boy sexually assaults a woman and their parents are like, he didn't do anything wrong. It
right,
was like
right.
A comical extension of that in this right. movie.
Yes.
Where like the cop was like ready to like commit arrest. Crimes
yeah, right.
for his but son.
Lee, what you're forgetting is everything changed when she got into photography. Okay.
And then all her friends said, no, thank you.
Yeah.
None of this anymore.
Yep.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's a good call. I Am Number Four was, there is just, there's maybe the least there.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's just, it's boring. That's its biggest sin, really. More so than almost any of the other ones, it's boring. If we've covered that, then I guess the next step is to go into drinks. I'll run down a quick list of the drink and the ingredients in it without going into too much detail, hopefully. For the Magic Flute, we did the Queen of the Night, which was Owen's Transfusion Mix, Gin, Luster, Dust, and Thyme. For Three to Tango, it was a hot drink called a Hot Oski. We did Honey Ginger Syrup, Bourbon Lemon, and Blueberries. For Who is Cletus Tout, we did the Cocktail Nonspecific, which was Hot Tea, Rum, Orange Juice, and Smoked Maple Syrup. For The Box, we did Button, which was bourbon, honey syrup, blueberries, blackberries, cardamom bitter, Luxardo cherries, and sparkling water. For Addicted to Love, we did Mutual Drinking Activity, which was St. Germain, Prosecco, sparkling water, mint, and strawberries. For It Could Happen to You, we had Yvonne's Ideal Coffee, which is iced coffee, smoked whiskey, Irish cream liqueur, and tobacco bitters. For The Singing Detective, we had The Heartbreak of Psoriasis, which was whiskey, Aperol, honey syrup, lemon juice, mint leaves, and tobacco bitters. For Something Like Summer, we had The Mariposa Roja, which was gin, club soda, Prosecco, lime juice, strawberries, and mint leaves. For The Apple, we had Magic Apple, Mystery Apple, Juju Apple, Voodoo Apple, Holy Apple, Sacred Apple, which was white wine, apple brandy, club soda, apples, pears, and a lemon. For I Am Number Four, we had I Am Number Three, London Dry Gin, which was gin, Aperol, sparkling yuzu juice, sea salt, and lime. For The Mummy Returns, we did a Mummy Returner, which was gin, Campari, orange liqueur, pomegranate juice, Amaro Nonino, and an orange. For Volunteers, we did Victory's Fuel, which was white rum, lemon ginger syrup, coconut seltzer, lime, Thai basil leaves. And for Happiest Season, closing out the year, we did a spiced alcohol, which was milk bourbon, dark chocolate, vanilla extract, salted butter, cardamom pods, and cinnamon.
This was another, like, this I feel like in my memory most of these drinks were at least solid and like pleasant to drink. Nothing sticks out in my mind as like terribly challenging.
See, that's
a massive misfire, you know?
Yeah, I was looking over these earlier, and I guess just to like start with like what I think is the worst, like, and this is kind of a stretch even, but I think like my least favorite was probably the spiced alcohol from Happiest Season, and that's kind of only because I wish it had been a little sweeter, which made it difficult for me to want to drink the whole thing.
Same.
And that's like kind of the only time from looking over this that I remember getting a drink where I was really just sort of like, eh, like this didn't quite work, you know, like an idea that sounded good on paper and then an execution didn't quite stand up to it.
Well, and it was like fine, but it just was not, which I'm just saying, like, we've had years where we have had some real tanks.
No, that is certainly true.
To have the worst be like the one that like it wasn't terrible, but it really didn't work. It's not that bad.
Yeah, no, I think maybe it's just a little bit, I think we're playing it a little safe, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's just sort of like, I think we're playing to what we know we like a little bit more, perhaps.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we're certainly not doing any more tamarind.
That to be fair, whenever Chris mentioned like we've had some really bad ones, like that was the one that instantly came to mind as like a drink. Like
it, but I loved it.
I truly did not care for it. I don't know, man. That was the Tamarind Delight. What was that, Lee? What was that movie called? Was that Terry
Mary Kahane?
Yeah. Yeah, that one I think was one of the few times where I've had a drink for this and was just like, I cannot finish this. Like, this is not going to be something that I enjoy doing. And so I think because we're not taking as many insane swings, mm-hmm. we're not yep. ending up with anything quite as terrible. I don't know. Maybe we need to try taking like a few insane swings this year just to see what we can come up with.
Hey, but decade of dreams, baby.
Yeah, decade of dreams. But I do think by and large, it's good that we're kind of playing to what we know we like and works mm-hmm. Because it makes it a more enjoyable experience for us, if nothing else.
Yeah.
If I were to sort of go for a favorite one, looking this over off the top of my head, the Mummy Returner from Mummy Returns was great. That was one I made again after the fact and turned out very well. Mm-hmm. I loved the I Am Number 3 London Dry Gin, ironically, from I Am Number 4, to the point that I suggested we use it for the island, not realizing that we had already used that recipe once before.
Yeah,
because like it sounded so good on paper. So it was because as soon as I like said that to you guys last night, I was reading over and I was like, dash of sea salt. We did another drink with a dash of sea salt. Like, what was that about?
Do that on?
Yeah, right. When it turns out it was like 4 months ago. So which really shows you like how good I am at keeping all this shit in my head. And I think lastly, the Heartbreak of Psoriasis from Singing Detective. Again, I think I'm just a big fan of Aperol for mm-hmm. for a lot of things too, which certainly doesn't hurt. But that was good. It was nice. It was smoky. It had tobacco bitters, which I have a whole bunch of them and have to use up. So I would say like those three are probably my favorites.
Yeah, I would agree. The Happiest Season, honestly, is definitely one of my top three. Mm-hmm. Could you remind me?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. What was the Singing Detective one?
The Singing Detective.
Heartbreak of Psoriasis.
Yeah, the Heartbreak of Psoriasis. I have it right here, which was whiskey, Aperol, honey syrup, lemon juice, yes. mint leaves, and tobacco bitters.
Mm. Amazing.
Yeah, no, that one was good delicious. As well. That one is one I need to definitely make again, I think.
Yeah, the Happiest, that was a surprise. Like, the Singing Detective was just a really solid drink, and Happy Season was such an amazing surprise of, like, the most delicious. Again, we just needed, like, a tiny bit more sweetness right. in there. Mm-hmm. But, like, I loved how kind of, like, earthy it was as a hot cocoa. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, it was just so delightful.
The cardamom was a really nice touch. Yeah. You know,
and it yes. doesn't have that, like, you know, when you just throw whiskey in hot chocolate and it just tastes like whiskey?
Right,
it doesn't
right,
have,
right.
It didn't have any of that. It just tasted like a nice warm cocoa drink mm-hmm. With a little bit of a kick. So it was definitely those. I think those were my top two. I can't really think of a third because there was frankly a lot of good gin for me this year. So
a lot of good gin.
Yeah. I've got three gins, by the way, from the calendar this year that I've put a star on if I can find them.
Good. Keep track of them.
Yeah, they're really notably good. Like, I
do you remember like what was their flavor profile?
Yeah, the one I had the other day was remarkable. It was like I smelled it and it was like, this smells festive. It was like mm-hmm. weirdly like, and I looked at it up like, and it says like that there's like, yeah, cinnamon on the nose and like mm-hmm. a licorice finish. Mm. And I'm like, yeah, like I can see that. Like I can definitely feel that. It was, yeah, weirdly kind of like sweet, not as harsh like a lot of gins can be. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the cinnamon that I was smelling where I was like, why am I getting a weird sweet vibe from this?
Yeah.
It was delightful. It was so good. I would think it would taste really good with orange bitters in something.
Okay. Ooh. That sounds like something we can riff on.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then there was a couple others. I mean, I remember the Shanghai gin. There's a company called Peddlers. Mm-hmm. Reminded me a lot of the T-Smith gin, which I don't know if they still make it or if I can't get it anymore.
T-Smith is fabulous, though.
Yeah. So I really like that. Again, like a softer botanical taste, mm-hmm. More floral and really good.
Yeah, that sounds good. So, yeah, no, that
I'm going to try to look those up again, but they were so good. A lot of the others have kind of blended together, but those three stood out.
Well, if you find like actual bottles of those, let us know and we'll figure out what we can do with them exactly.
Yeah.
Because that sounds promising to me.
For myself, I think for me, the worst, and this is not to say it was a bad drink, just but the mutual drinking activity for Addicted to Love, it tasted perfectly fine. It sticks out to me as the one that was just sort of the most normal, mm-hmm. basic, not necessarily a bad way, but just sort of the others, there was a little bit more, there was like another layer or another twist to it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I liked mutual drinking activity just fine, but of all of them, that was probably the bottom for me. But for ones I really loved, I loved Yvonne's Ideal Coffee from It Could Happen to You.
Yeah.
I remember that that lovely, just perfectly balanced, like smoky note to it, to be the cigarette ash that gets dumped in the coffee. I also remember really enjoying the Magic Flute from, the Queen of the Night from the Magic Flute. Just because it had been forever since I had had anything with transfusion mix before. And same. It just like, it blew me away all over again. I was just like, God, this is such a, like, I would even just drink that on its own without alcohol. Like,
yeah,
it tastes so good.
Yeah, I did, because I had to buy like a bunch of the mixer for us to use it. And honestly, like, I just did drink a couple cans of it at one point because it tasted really good.
And the other one I'm going to throw in for is Button Button from the box. I remember it being a really nice balance of like the fruit and the bourbon. Mm-hmm. And that was another good use of cardamom, because that's a really solid choice. Yeah, at least it says so on the recipe.
I don't remember that at all. Crazy.
Well, but
cardamom bitters. It was cardamom bitters. Okay,
if
so
correctly, it's not. It shouldn't be socking you in the nose.
Right. I was just going to say, yeah. So I might not have like picked up on it as much because it was just bitters. It was probably a little bit more like, you know, ingrained in the drink,
right?
Versus the Happiest Season, which I definitely got some stronger cardamom tones from.
Right. Well, and I think especially with the button drink, it's really just there to counteract, but to try to like put a ceiling over how sweet it can
right.
be,
which I really right. mean. Which I mean, to be fair, I have a shit ton of cardamom pods now. So like, if we want to try using cardamom again in something, I have a lot of it. So
hey, if you want to give another shot to that hot chocolate at your Jack Bacchanalia, that could be the way.
That's true.
Yeah, if that's like. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty small, right? We're talking like maybe 8 people, so.
Yeah, so it just feel like it'd be pretty easy to do.
Something you can make at that scale, absolutely. Fuck up my kitchen with that.
Okay, I guess that covers drinks so far as we.
Yes,
so
far as we just got. Flew by. Yeah. I would have claimed that we did Magic Flute last year. So when I saw it on the list,
it
was
very early.
That's right.
To be fair,
it was pretty early.
It was our first. We'll have to think of, I guess, a summer theme to use again.
I know.
So now that we've covered what, like musicals,
weddings,
high school movies, weddings.
Yeah. There's probably something around like, I'm just spitballing.
Spitball.
I have no basis in if there are movies like this, but something around like movies that are about like hot mess woman. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I do know what you mean. Yeah.
And
to
like,
be fair,
I
definitely
like
know what you mean.
Kind of a genre that like probably the Michelle Pfeiffer movie for Christmas. Unfortunately, that is Christmas movie. Like, I feel like that would belong there, right? Where it's like,
yeah,
a lot of movies
mean,
try to nail this like bridesmaids kind of vibe. And fail.
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. That is certainly true. I mean, like, I don't know, maybe we should consider putting together some possible ideas for that as a theme, frankly, because like, I'm sure that there are a lot of those movies that are very bad. So
yeah,
there's definitely options there.
I'm sure
of
it as well.
In fairness, I have read more positive reviews of Oh What Fun than negative. So it
really?
Could actually be good.
I'll have to look. I didn't really, beyond the initial reviews, I didn't really look too much into it. So I have to see. 32 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, woof. Never mind then.
I do still, I'm probably going to try and watch it this year before Christmas, just so I can be like, is this something we should be doing in the future? Or just,
could
you know.
Could be for next year. Could be for next Christmas.
It is possible, because God knows we always need a Christmas movie.
Yeah, I mean, we have done like every movie that we could do. It really is down to like dregs for Christmas movies.
No, I know that's the problem, right? Or just like things you don't care about, you know? Just like things you don't, like the Jim Carrey Grinch. Like, I don't really want to talk about the Jim Carrey Grinch, you know?
I mean, I've seen it. I would talk about it, but you know, what is there to say, really?
I find it
unwatchable. Like, right, that's the thing too. It's like, it's an ugly movie. It's too long. It's unpleasant. Like, I don't know. Man, fuck, maybe there is something to be said about it.
I don't enjoy watching it though. Like,
no, that's certainly true. I don't enjoy. I think there's like a handful of good bits, is my recollection, and then it's just a lot of like yelling at people.
And realistically, the fix is don't make this movie. We have a perfectly fine 20-minute TV special.
No, I know that is the problem, unfortunately. But it's like the same thing with the Polar Express, right? Where it's like, well, this movie is going to be made, so you're going to have to figure out a way to justify making this into a 90-minute movie.
Mm. Right.
Anyway, that's a bridge we can cross when we come to it. But
another year in the books.
What a year. What a year indeed. Another year in the books. I'm closing that book, guys. This is the closing of the year. 2025 is closed up. Remember this when you do your taxes in a couple of months. It is no longer 2025. You'll be able to submit your taxes without any problem because you've listened to this.
Yeah. And you're welcome. You're welcome. And the next time you'll hear from us, it'll be in the new year.
It'll be very
happy holidays.
Very early on the new year. Yeah. So
happy new year to everyone.
Merry Christmas. Kwanzaa's probably coming up soon. I don't actually know. Hanukkah's continuing unabated. Despite all the efforts of the Hanukkah Grinch, who I believe is a real character, Hanukkah still keeps happening. So we'll be
back.
Which
I believe is a real character.
I believe he is. Yeah. I believe he's a real character. He's a real character, that Hanukkah Grinch.
He's more than a card. He's the whole pack.
Yes.
There are actually eight
Hanukkah Grinches.
Yeah.
every night another one must like find the joy of Hanukkah.
Is this similar to how there's just this like expansive world of Mary Poppins characters that are all just these weird demigods? Is that the same way, that there's just going to be eight different Grinches for each of the nights?
Oh, you mean like Cousin Topsy?
Exactly. Mm.
Meryl Streep as Topsy Poppinsovich or something like that.
Right.
Was that really her name?
It was something Russian. It wasn't literally Poppinsovich, but it was something like Topsy Topsovich or something like that. Because Meryl Streep was doing some accent work. That's the one thing I remember very vividly, aside from all the BMXing.
What's the deal there? How are they so cross continental if they're related?
I don't know. I mean, well, you can have cousins with different surnames, different places. It's possible. I mean, Mary Poppins can't fly around by umbrella. So I feel like, you know, her family can probably just cross pollinate the world willy nilly, as it were.
Yeah. It could be that there's just sort of one per like continent as well.
That's true. Yes. And she look. This was like after the fall of the Russian Empire. Yes. She was exiled to London.
Right.
Her and Anastasia fled.
She is our Anastasia. Oy. All right. So we've put a bow on it. That's the closing of the year, baby. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the island and all the secrets that the island contains. Mm. So, draftpack.com is the website. You can find the episodes on there and everything like that. All the normal podcast streaming apps, Apple Podcasts, Stitchy Preams, all that nonsense. You can find us there, listen to us there, subscribe, follow, rate, whatever you want to call it. It's all there, baby. We'll be back with our full episode in 2 weeks. Until then, bye.
Bye.